People across Ireland are struggling with the shortage of carers and the impacts that that is having on their wish to continue to live in their own home. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Sarah Lennon. She's Executive Director of Sage Advocacy. Sarah, you're welcome to the programme. Sarah, when we're speaking about carers in this specific instance, we're not talking about loved ones caring for family members in their own homes. We're talking about, for want of a better phrase, professional carers.
Correct, yeah. So we're talking about the home care service that are provided across the state, where simply put at the moment it's proving impossible in many cases to get these private or professional carers for older people living in their own homes.
And pre-pandemic, did we have this difficulty, or was it more or less acute at that time?
There's always been difficulties really with the home care services for one reason or another. In some cases, it's been just the availability of the actual hours, the funding for home care. And I think the big problem is that while we're familiar with the nursing home care and things like the Fair Deal, there's a right to nursing home care. There's no right to home care. So in the past, there may have been just different issues. So I suppose it's never been that smoothly running on the ground.
There's also kind of a separate but aligned issue with how the hours of care are calculated, because I know you would have spoken to numerous people. I've heard them give their own testimony where, for example, you're accorded 2 hours in the morning for two carers. But if one carer is available and turns up, you're still billed effectively, or 2 hours goes down on your sheet, even though just one was used.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely proving to be the case. And as you mentioned, you know, we would be familiar with people who maybe would have 20 hours of care, which over a week might seem sufficient. But, you know, the reality might be two people might be required for showering or for other types of support services. So if two people turn up for 1 hour, that's actually 2 hours out of your overallocation. So it can be used up very quickly.
But how then in a purely accounting term, is that allocation squared if only half the number of carers hours are being used by people being physically present?
Yeah, and I suppose that is another issue really with the service. It's just that piece around, you know, the lack of regulation of home care, the lack of oversight, the fact that there's different providers of home care. There's private home care providers and there's public home care providers as well. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of issues with the provision of home care, and Sage Advocacy would have called for, you know, a regulated right to home care so that it's very explicit what you have a right to, and obviously then if you've a right to that, you can hold people accountable and make sure it's delivered.
And the reason that it is in probability on many occasions, but not on all occasions, linked to the difficulty with the shortage of carers, that is that you would imagine, Sarah, that if carers aren't turning up, and there's no particular blame on an individual carer working for a specific company here, but they go where they are allocated on a day-to-day basis. But if one is turning up where two are needed, you would assume it's because the company itself does not have the staff to fulfil those two carer positions in that household on that day.
It would definitely seem to be a staffing shortage. And I mean, we also have to bear in mind that if two carers are required and one is allocated, then that's also a risk to retention of those very good workers as well. So I think, you know, what we are seeing on the ground is there's no let up in need for it. There has actually been a significant amount of home care hours allocated, probably still not enough for a lot of people, but actually finding the workers and having that care delivered has been the biggest issue on the ground.
Which kind of suggests two problems. One, funding on the state side in order to provide the care, and the other, the number of people who may voluntarily choose to work as carers. Mm-hmm. So if the funding is forthcoming from the state side, then you have to pose the question, is this an attractive job? Are the terms and conditions under which people are working to provide care, are they favourable?
I think that's a fair question. I know it's already been mentioned by members of government that in the upcoming budget, they might be looking at the whole package, particularly from the perspective of workers. I think, you know, from the perspective of somebody who's receiving care, you know, you may have some very good carers working with you, but if that person is different every time, for example, because there's no retention of workers, that's going to be very challenging to you in terms of receiving intimate care, or letting someone into your home. If you imagine 2, 3, 4 different people in any given month coming into your home, you're getting used to somebody and they've moved on. So I think the attractiveness of of the jobs, but also retaining workers is a big challenge. And the quality of care is directly related, I suppose, to making sure that there's good supported employees in these schemes.
Because I would imagine carers form relationships, often very affectionate relationships with the people with to whose homes they go every day. And to have that constantly changing, if you were the person to whom the service is being provided, Sarah, it would be deeply unsettling and also so make you feel out of control in your own home.
Exactly, deeply unsettling is right. And I know that if you have a consistent carer coming to your home as well, particularly if you have dementia or another age-related condition, you know, if you have a carer coming regularly to you, there can be an early warning maybe that something's not right, that you're not well. People get to know you, what's normal for you, what looks like when you're in good form, for example. And it can be an important safeguarding thing as well to have good, strong relationships with the people providing care. Unfortunately, just due to the shortages at the moment, that's just not possible.
And what do you hope for in the budget tomorrow when the ministers get to their feet, Sarah?
Yeah, so what we hope for is that the short-term issue, which is just that shortage on the ground, is dealt with. And I know that, again, look, the Minister for State for Health has said that, you know, probably a lot more pay is required there. So the government will hopefully address that in some way. But what we really want is, as well as, you know, short-term measures, that the long-term, the future of care. So I mentioned earlier that home care, there's no right to it. It's not regulated. That needs to be addressed. We know that there are pilots being rolled out in December, and we need the learning from those pilots to be implemented very, very quickly. Most people have told us that they want to get older and receive care if they need it in their own home. They don't want to be forced or funneled into nursing home care ahead of when they might require that level of care. So I think we need to start prioritising home care in the short term, but also put in place all of the long term measures that we need to make sure it's a realistic option for everyone who's getting older.
Sarah Lennon, Executive Director at Sage Advocacy, thank you indeed for joining us. Now, today is International Coming Out Day, and to mark this, I'm joined on the line now by Muninia Griffiths. She's Chief Executive of Belong To. Muninia, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to do so. I suppose a lot of people listening at home might be scratching their heads going, why are we still celebrating this? We have marriage equality. But that would be to wrongly conflate two separate issues.
I know, right? Lots of people probably feel that way. But the reason we're launching the video campaign today is to raise funds for Belong To Youth Services so that we can continue to offer our life-saving supports to LGBT young people across Ireland, including the LGBT groups that we support in Kildare. Members of the LGBT community have come out to share their stories, and what we're doing then is we're asking people to watch the videos and to donate the amount of that reflects the age that they came out at on our website belongto.org. But yeah, as you said, you know, you think a post-marriage equality referendum, it's, you know, it should all be fine and it shouldn't be a big problem. But unfortunately, just like generations of LGBT people who've come out before them, young people today in Ireland are worrying about rejection and negative reactions, bullying, and even worse. So we know from our frontline work, from our youth workers who support young people every day on the phones and face-to-face and via email, that coming out is still the number one issue that we get called about. We get in contact by young people and parents, actually, for support around.
And I would imagine it's quite difficult for anybody either who hasn't been in a position to come out to anybody, or anybody who hasn't been the person privileged to receive that information, to understand quite how difficult it can be.
Oh, hugely. I mean, I know in my own case, you know, it took me a long time to pluck up the courage to say it out loud to anyone else, because I was just so worried about how people would perceive me. And I think that's, you know, you're worried about family rejecting you or all sorts of things. So you build it up in your head. And usually, thankfully, it's never quite as bad, you know. But we always say to young people to do it at their own pace, when they feel safe to do so and ready to do so, and also to, you know, to put in place a plan so that you're meeting friends afterwards after you have those chats, so that if they don't go the way you hope them to go, that you have, you know, you have a safety net, and give people some time. You know, as an LGBT person, you have a bit of time to process it and come out to yourself in your head. So when you give that news to somebody else, lots of people are going to be really happy and have a positive experience. Some it's going to take quite a bit of time for them to process it. But mostly, thankfully, people come around to it and they love you and accept you for who you are.
What I think is really important about the campaign is that there are people who have just become adults, 18-year-olds. There are people such as yourself, Moninia, sharing your story of coming out at 30. And then Alva Smith, a frequent guest on this programme, sharing her story of coming out as a parent at 38. All walks of life are here.
Absolutely. You're right. We've Michael Ryan, who people will know as Pixie Woo, who's on that Glow Up program at the moment. He was 18. Again, he told his sister first, and then the sister very kindly agreed to tell the parents so that they had a bit of time to process it and then come and talk to Michael and with love and acceptance and saying all the right things. We also have Jack Dunn, who's a Leinster rugby player. He came out at 18 as well. And he thought everybody knew, but nobody had a clue. And so he was driving himself, you know, kind of crazy, being all paranoid about it. And once, you know, he talks beautifully about it, once he told friends, it was like a massive weight coming off his chest. And people, you know, he just trusted his friends and family. And most of them had a good reaction. Some of them didn't have a good reaction. But there were, you know, enough people who did have a good reaction that he was able to, you know, go on and be really happy and be really proud of himself for being himself.
And Moninia, if anybody listening does need Belong To's help or support, how can they access that?
So you can go onto our website, belongto.org, and you can make an appointment to speak to a youth worker. There's also loads of information there on the website. And you can also find a youth group that's near you. So we support a nationwide network of youth groups across Ireland. So the big thing is to know that you're not alone, that there are people all over the country going through this at the moment. Coming out is scary, but it's the biggest gift you'll ever give yourself, is to be yourself and to be proud of who you are.
Moninia Griffith, Chief Executive of Belong To, thank you indeed for joining us. Seems that we've done more talking about pensions, pension contributions, pension ages in the last 6 weeks than collectively as a society we may have done in the last 6 years. I know Clem covered this very extensively with Frank Connolly of SIPTU on Kildare today this morning, and we're continuing that conversation. I'm joined on the line now by John Lowe, Founder and Managing Director of The Money Doctors. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much indeed. And good afternoon to you and all listeners as well.
I suppose a significant contributory factor to the fact that you and I are having this conversation today is the fact that auto enrolment, which was first flagged 20 odd years ago, has not yet been introduced.
No, and it's a shame because it's really putting pressure on the current state pension. I mean, auto enrollment is where the employers were going to set up a pension and contribute to the pension, irrespective of whether the employee was going to do it or not. But they had to make a contribution. That's been put off, and it's now, you know, put up to 2023. And that's the one thing that actually can save what's actually happening out there. Because, I mean, they're not, I mean, 2021 was the year designated to increase the pension age to 67, and then in 2028, Ciara, it was meant to go to 68. Well, the elections obviously scuppered that, and last week the Pensions Commission announced, after months of consideration, a very convoluted structure whereby in 2031, which is 10 years away, the pension age will creep up to 67, and then another 8 years, 2039, it'll go to 68. Now, you'd have to ask yourself, why is it doing that? Why are the ages going out? Well, the plain answer is that we're living longer, we're getting healthier, and there's not enough money to pay for all these pensions. And as I said so many times before, that within 20 years, I think the state pension will be abolished. And that's why we really need to look at things like auto-enrollment, all the kind of the new Irish, the people who are coming abroad from other countries to our country to work and help to, you know, invest in the exchequer funds that will actually help our country going forward. I mean, that's all hugely important.
And arguably, it's not just the state pension, what people would historically have known as the old age pension. We don't call it that anymore. But it's also the pensions that the states the state pays. So Declan called Ciara earlier and raised a very, very interesting point. And he says you should increase the age of retirement to 67 or 68 or increase the private sector age, not the public sector. And what he means by that is a Garda can retire at the age of 50 if they've served for 30 years. They will receive €150 a week pension. If they live to 80, they will have spent more of their life receiving the pension than they did the pay packet. Similarly, for a teacher who can retire at 55, and Declan notes that this may be changing or has changed, there are other areas of civil society where that is the case, and we know particularly the defence forces, etc. And there may be very good reasons in some of those instances why that is the case. For example, you may not be able to or inclined to withstand the rigours of being a soldier on active duty into your 60s. But for other parts, for other professions for which state pensions are paid, surely there is a case for reform.
Well, the civil servants would be a prime example. You know, I have to say, like the actual public sector package for pensions, including politicians, by the way, is enormous. And there, you know, I know that it's changed even in the politicians. Like you used to be able to, if you were, you know, had a full session as a TD and you retired or you didn't get elected, you could take out your pension at that point, even though you were in your 30s, 40s or 50s. That stopped and it's now, I think it's gone to the same age. But there are still a huge number of politicians who retired at 40 and are getting huge sums of money. I mean, that's ongoing. But the public sector payroll is enormous, absolutely enormous. And that's enough to actually stop the state pension continuing. I don't know what the solution is, but certainly auto-enrollment was certainly one of those many solutions that has just been, you know, tossed aside, essentially. And I mean, it's 2023 now, but I'm quite sure it'll be... I mean, even those pension ages, by the way, 67 in 2031 and then 68 in 2039, they still have to be ratified by the Tax and Welfare Commission. That's not going to happen until next summer. So we're still, you know, kicking the can down the road when it comes to all these areas, because it's really, really important. And that's why I keep stressing, by the way, Ciara, that people should start thinking about their own pension. It is an actual, let's just say that it is an actual, one of the best investments that you can get into. If you're on even 20% tax and you can put in €100 a month into your pension, the government is giving you back €20, which means that you're up 20% before you start. You know, over any period of time, the stock market is always going to be the best return of any asset class. So if you're, I mean, I had a young girl who set up a pension there about a year and a half ago, in fact, made publicity because I mentioned the fact that she had, you know, was 26 years of age, set up a pension, and when she found out exactly what was happening, she was actually visibly upset at the idea that she'd missed out on 2 years' pension contributions, and she's only 26. You know, so there's not many people like her, I have to say. I wish there were, because that's exactly what we need, is to the realization. I don't know, for a lot of people, they think... couldn't be bothered thinking about the future, the 60s,
70s.
But that's
cultural, John, and I would argue that that culture is the same culture that has resulted in a situation where successive governments have elected not to introduce auto-enrolment. We're all of us in this fugue state about the future.
Well, you know why that is, Ciara, of course. Auto-enrolment, number one, the unions, the employees and their unions, they don't want, because the employees don't think about the future. IBEC, the employers' union, they don't want it either, because it means they have to put money in their pocket, take their hand in their pocket and take money out. And then the politicians don't want it either, because you know what they want? They just want your vote. So they're quite happy to be ambivalent and sit on the side, you know, and do nothing, which is what they're basically doing.
Well, John Lowe, founder and director of The Money Doctors, thank you as ever for joining us. A record-breaking year last year for One Family, with a massive surge in the number of people seeking its supports and a similar very large increase in the number of people seeking parenting courses. I'm joined on the line now by Karen Kiernan, Chief Executive of One Family. Karen, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
This really points to an awful lot of households up and down the land where there is distress, where there is a need for additional supports and services.
That's right. We were, during the pandemic, we moved all our services online and to telephone. So we were working with parents from all over the country who were really struggling with the lockdowns, with conflict in their family, with, you know, shared parenting agreements that were in place, being thrown out the window, with people living together, really under a pressure cooker situation where people may want to separate and couldn't, or there was domestic violence or abuse in the home. So a lot of things going on. And I suppose what we're saying is to government, we're going to see a lot of separations and divorce coming through in the next couple of years. And we need to have specialist services for everybody around the country and not just in limited places in Dublin.
And arguably, those people who may in the coming months, or certainly in the slightly more medium term, be deciding, look, my relationship is over, I need a separation, I need a divorce, are going to face a considerably longer than usual time to try and access the family courts, because there's a huge pandemic backlog as it is, thereby increasing their personal sense of instability and stress.
Yeah, it's really hard for people when they don't know what's happening. Separation process is quite long in Ireland, even though we voted to reduce it in terms of divorce waiting time a couple of years ago. But we really haven't grasped the nettle of how to help people separate or divorce well. It's still relatively new. We haven't got the kinds of institutions or supports that they have in other countries. You've got the backlog, as you say, in the courts. Now, some aren't as bad as others, but people are waiting to get everyday things resolved. So they're having to maybe look at mediation, look at counselling, parenting supports, the kinds of things that we work with people who are separating around. And we can see huge value in that, because it can help people work out their own parenting plan, figure out how they want to separate without just automatically going to court. So we're saying these services work, but you need to have them around the country and available to everybody, so that when we do get hit by this wave of people who are separating and divorcing, we're ready for it, and we're able to help people keep the focus on their children, because that's what's really important. Children don't do well in conflict, but they can do okay with separation once people can handle it well.
You mentioned, Karen, that other countries have services such as these in place. Are they well established there, or are these new developments in those countries and we're lagging behind by a small bit, or are we really lagging behind here?
We're decades behind.
We're absolutely decades
behind. So the Department of Justice is now looking at reforming and establishing specialist family law courts for the first time in Ireland. And there's a whole process going on around that. That has been done years ago, say in the UK. They have a child and family assessment and support service for families going through private family law courts. They're there to do assessments, they're there to do parenting courses, they're in the court to see are there difficulties, and they're still saying their system's not right and needs to be improved. So we are really far behind, but we can learn from other countries and we can learn about what works. But at the moment we're kind of over relying on adversarial courts that can take a really long time, can be very costly, and we're saying there's other ways of helping people to resolve their problems and come up with ways for parenting their family in a shared way, but not together anymore. But those things need to be invested in around the country to make sure everybody has access to them.
Do you have any sense, Karen, as to why we do not place a premium, or certainly haven't heretofore, on those kinds of services, which evidently make a very difficult process that bit easier for all concerned, but particularly children?
I mean, we've an interesting history in Ireland, which is different to other countries, because we came to divorce so late. We still make divorce relatively very difficult compared to other countries. So we're not really, I think, in a mature state as a country in terms of how to help people get through separation and divorce. We also treated all family things as private matters, rather than seeing them as actually the public good. And this is what we're saying now, and I think what government is seeing is that for some families, they are not able to maybe focus entirely on their children. They might be using their children as a pawn sometimes in family breakdown and in court situations. And we've got to focus solely on children to do that. You need to have the right agencies there, the right assessments, the right staff who are trusted by everybody to do right by children. So I think we're coming to it late, and I think we just haven't been looking at it the right way. So now we need to turn the lens of our concern about children also into private family law and say, look, we need to help people. We need to put in the structures that people can do this as well as they can, because everybody wants the best for their children. They just may have different views of how to go about doing that.
And how, Karen, did you and one family cope with the massive volumes of increasing in contacts you received, particularly in quarter two of last year? 68% increase in calls to the Ask One Family helpline. That's huge.
It's huge. And parents were so distressed. There were so many problems coming at them. So what we were able to do was divert some of our staff from our face-to-face services onto our helpline. We got some additional funding from PUSLA for counselling and helpline work, which was great. We were able to liaise with various government bodies and agencies, figure out what the changes were, get that out to people quite quickly, and just try to solve, you know, small problems for people that were there and causing them distress. But certainly we found with counselling, we delivered much more counselling last year, but to the same number of people, because people were so finding it so difficult, they weren't able to move on. And so we had to eventually close our waiting list for counselling. Now, that's unprecedented for us in one family. So I think what we're seeing as a country is a level of anxiety and difficulty that has been building up, and people still need support. And that's OK. It's OK to want support, but we have to make it available to people.
And in terms of the services available now, Karen, how can people access your helpline?
Yeah, so the easiest way to get onto us is through our website, which is onefamily.ie. We also have a Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter. But our parenting courses are on, like, there's rounds of them three times a year, and they're on Zoom, so people can join in from all over the country. And there's also a lot of top tips for parents on the website. The helpline runs every day, and that's that number is on the website. It's just changed. I think I'll give you the Dublin number, which is 01662 9212, because they've changed the 1890 numbers, and so that is in the process of changing. But people can get in touch to look for information, or just for a bit of support, just for a listening ear. If somebody is feeling isolated, or they're feeling down and they are living in a one parent family, we are here at the end of the phone or an email to help. And there are many other parents in the same situation, so we do want people to know they're not on their own.
Karen Kiernan, Chief Executive of One Family, thank you for joining us. The Listowel Varna Matchmaking Festival is taking place this year, but for the first time ever, it's gone on tour. I'm joined on the line now by legendary Listowel Varna matchmaker, Willie Daly. Willie, you're welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much, Ciara.
Do you have your sunscreen ready?
Yeah, it's exciting to be exposed to, you know, so many, I suppose. First, I'd like to say, I suppose, you know, the Listowel Varna Festival was very good in Listowel Varna this time. It was more modest than other years, but it was like just 30 years ago, and it was really good. And I suppose I'm really, as I say, excited about the kindling of between Irish people and Spanish people, you know, because they're totally different races. Irish people are very laid back, and they drink a lot and sing a lot and dance a lot. And Spaniards are impulsive, but they're very good-looking and romantic as well. So I'm hoping that there'll be a great blend of both. And I think a lot of men are kind of might feel a bit threatened. You know, these very heavy flamenco dancers, now they're a bit like a traditional set dancer to an extent. So it'll be wonderful, you know, what might unwind from it, you know, unfold after it's out there for a bit.
And
people kind of need it, Ciara. There's been... people are love-starved. I won't say sex-starved now, but they are love-starved.
You'd probably be right to say sex-starved as well, in fairness to you, Willie.
You could almost say it. You know, people are afraid to go near each other. But no, I mean, when this Taverna was on this year at home, you know, I saw people meeting that... it'd be Listowel Varna friends now. They wouldn't kind of have contact maybe. They'd just meet and laugh a lot, dance a lot. But I saw people actually crying. And they met, and this is the first time I ever saw people kissing with masks on them, you know. They were so adamant, I guess, I want to get at each other, but so interested in, you know, they hadn't time to hang around and take off their masks to have a kiss. I thought, I said, gee, that's fantastic.
Time is of the essence. So for people maybe who don't know, you're packing up lock, stock and barrel. You're off to Alicante next week. Do you know how many people are coming from Ireland to you? And do the fine people of Spain have a clue what's in store for them?
I'm a great believer in the element of surprise. So, you know, I believe it now. Even with all my years of matchmaking, out of 50 or more, I've never used photographs. I keep saying it's lovely to have the element of surprise, because you always dream that this person that you're going to meet is beautiful. Like, if it's a man, that he might resemble, we say, Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio. And if it was a woman, then a lot of fellas would be envisaging maybe meeting the likes of Pamela Anderson or Kylie Minogue. But, so they may not actually look like that when they meet, but they have a build-up in their mind that would carry them a long way up to that point. And then they see each other. And it could be different. As somebody said, I said, it's nice to have a surprise. And they said, yeah, but it could be a shock as well. But it isn't. I think when you, it's lovely to envisage, you know, and forever in Ireland, where there weren't these older people marrying younger girls, that young girl, of course, would have a dream of a beautiful, young, good-looking boy.
Yeah.
And but then that was okay as well, because that time it was very much, the man was all the time the breadwinner. And while he was important, he wouldn't be, his role was more important than himself. And then maybe where they'd have 9 or 10 lovely children, that the house would actually be full of love, you know.
It's shocking how
but
much times
a small bit, Ira.
How much times have changed and how quickly they've changed. But I know you're packing your suitcase now, so we won't delay you too much, because you've a lot to do before you get to Alicante.
But I think there's a good few Irish people have inquired, and you know what I feel as well. It's kind of a time of the year when a lot of people do take holidays.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost kind of November, so I think there's going to be a lot of. And the man that's organising it is wonderful. I introduced him to a woman in Listonverna 41 years ago. No, I think she died 2 years ago. So He's kind of, it's a kind of a thank you for that to an extent. And maybe he's hoping to capture some of that atmosphere that Listonverna has as well, and the magic. Listonverna is about magic and love and drinking, really, you know.
And Willie, if this works, and there's no reason to think it wouldn't, if you brought that little bit of Listonverna magic with you to Alicante, is this something you might consider doing every year?
I could see it happening. Would you believe that? No, I can see it happening, Kira. And the people want me to go to England now around either now or Christmas or just before Valentine's Day, and people like that, they just, but I mean, the reality is, Kieran, I don't like talk of this, but you have to get read it many times in life, but I'm joking now, I'll ask. But there is an atmosphere and something in this environment that is magic. And you know what, now, as much as, and I hope it will be, that this magic will travel across the water to Spain, because Spanish people are nice people. But Listonverna has a really unique atmosphere of happiness and love and just lovely people attending it. Whatever, it attracts the nicest of people. And they dance from 12 o'clock every morning up till 5 and 6 in the evening, and then from about 9 o'clock on again till, and more than that. But it's the feature, the prices of Listonverna as well are great. They put that music on through the whole September for 33 days. And they're great to do it. And like I said it to a man that had a premises in the spa, I said, you're great to do this. He says, it's a tradition. He says, my father did it and we grew up with it. And I think that's lovely to hear that. You know?
It is. And it makes the place of Listonverna all the more special. But no reason you can't start a new tradition in Alicante.
Well, I'm hoping to now. I'll be honest, I'm hoping this. And I think there's something about Irish people when they get in the sun. You know, they're a different physically. All my matchmaking has been physical as much as possible when people that see each other. And all of a sudden, with the Irish climate, they're going around a lot. You could have a beautiful girl and she might have 2 or 3 coats on her, you know, with the weather being so cold.
Yeah.
And the same with fellas that have a couple of suits on them, maybe just to stay warm. But out there, you know, they'll be able to, they won't be wearing all those clothes. So they're all going to really look who they are and what they are, you know.
Well, Willie Daly, legendary Listonverna matchmaker. Bon voyage. Have a wonderful time.
Thank you
time.
So much, Kira.
Hope you bring the magic of Listonverna with you to Alicante.
So.
Take care,
Thank
Willie.
You, Kira.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that is, as I said, legendary matchmaker Willie Daly.